This morning I'm reading, excuse me, my wife took the notes. I'm reading from Matthew chapter 6, verses 5 through 10. This has been an unusual week. First of all, just be reminded there are 5 selling days left in this month. But Thursday, Sherry called me and I had pulled into a McDonald's. I was going to grab a cup of coffee. I had to drive to Georgia, and so I was like, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. And so I talked to her on the phone and I hung the phone up, turned it off and dropped it in my pocket and went into McDonald's. And I noticed that, boy, because I knew the McDonald's in town have new owners. And I thought, well, they have really spiced this place up. The music in here is beautiful. And so I go to the counter and I order my senior cup of coffee, and the music is, I mean, it's the 3 tenors and they're singing, and it's just like, wow, at McDonald's. And so I get out to the car and I can still hear the music. And now I'm thinking something's going on, and I look in my pocket and somehow my phone has decided that it needed to open up iHeartRadio. And I'm listening to some Italian song being sung by the 3 tenors. It was beautiful, but it was some Italian name. But so don't get your hopes up about McDonald's. It's still McDonald's. Matthew chapter 6, verse 5. Jesus said, and whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. When you are praying, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask Him. That's an important phrase, particularly in the light of today's message. Pray then in this way: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. For me personally, this is the most difficult section of the Lord's Prayer. I have no problem praying Our Father. I have no problem praying hallowed be thy name, or, you know, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and keep us out of evil, and meet my needs. But when you get to this section, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, it means that I am giving up control of my day to God. I'm giving up control to God. And I've mentioned it to you before, I live by a calendar. I have a calendar in my car, or I take it in my office, I write down my appointments, I can tell you where I'm supposed to be tomorrow at 9, and I can tell you, I can outline for you my day. Because that calendar sits open on the passenger seat of my car, and when I'm through with an appointment, I take my pen, I scratch it off, and where am I going next? But when I pray, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, I'm taking my calendar, and not my business calendar, I'm taking my life. I'm taking my checkbook. I'm taking my marriage. I'm taking my relationships. I'm taking everything that I touch, and I am saying, Lord, here it is. Your will be done. Here's the difficulty for me in this passage, is that I have a tendency to lose focus on that phrase, thy will be done. I tend to look for the billboard that says, this is God's will. Like the the insurance adjuster who, when he is writing up your damage, a tree fell on your house or your roof blew off, and he's got to give some kind of cause, the tendency is to say it's an act of God. Or the well-meaning friend who, in an attempt to comfort someone, says to them, well, God took your son because he needs him. Or the patient who leaves the physician's office with a fearful diagnosis and is told by their friend, well, it must be God's will. But in this prayer, Jesus is not calling us to look for a billboard that says, this is God's will. Nor is he calling us to try to understand events or to come up with some kind of pithy statement to fill in for people when they're facing something, to come up that awkward moment, you know, where somebody says, hey, this is what's going on in my life, and you're sitting there and it's like, well, I need to say something. He's calling us to move forward in life boldly as we place our life in his hands and we say to him, thy will be done, because there is a mistaken view of God's will. And it is incorrect to believe that everything that occurs is God's will. I can remember about 34 years ago, the first church that I was pastoring, it was in Thomasville, and there was a couple who were members of our church. They lived in Pelham. And he called me early one Friday morning, and he said, can you go to Pelham to my sister's house and meet me there? And he gave me her address. And he said their daughter was just killed in a car accident about 100 yards from their house. She was going to school that morning, came to an intersection that she had been to probably hundreds of times over the years, a two-way stop. And she stopped and apparently went out and did not see a truck that was coming, and that truck hit her right in the door. And so that was on a Friday morning. So on a Sunday afternoon, I'm in the high school gymnasium in Pelham, Georgia, trying to officiate at this young girl's funeral that I did not know, and watching the cheerleaders coming by and leaving stuff, and the football players leaving stuff, and now I need to get up and talk to them. Or the parents who called me about 16 years ago to let me know that the mom and their two-year-old daughter were in a car accident and the mother was fine. She got out of the car without a scratch on her, and their two-year-old daughter was dead. And they needed me not only to come to the hospital but to officiate at a funeral. I cannot conceive that I could stand up in front of someone and say to them, this is God's will. God needed your two-year-old daughter more than you did. God needed your 16-year-old daughter more than you did. So how do we view the events of life that we cannot explain? Well, we view them as people who live in a cursed world. Genesis chapter 3, verse 17, it says, then God said to Adam, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field in the sweat of your face. You shall eat bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. In John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus said this. He said, the thief comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy. But I am come that you might have life, and you might have it more abundantly. God is not the thief. There is a thief, but Jesus said, there is a thief, but I'm not the thief. Romans chapter 8, verse 22, Paul says this about the world we live in. He said, we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs. Everything around us, we cannot see it. But Paul said all of creation is groaning and laboring in birth pangs because it knows that there is something better that needs to be produced. When Adam and Eve sinned and that curse came upon the earth knew, and I'm not talking about Mother Earth, but I'm talking about creation, realized there's something better that's coming. We live in a world that is cursed. We live in a society that is cursed. So we view world events and world situations and things that happen in our lives, we have to view it from a realization of we live in a cursed world. Death has entered the world. Sin has entered the world. And we live in a world that is befuddled by the weight of sin and death that's upon it. We have to view these situations not only as realizing that we live in a cursed world, but we view them as people who have a limited vision. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 12 says this, "For man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." The writer of Ecclesiastes says, we don't know from day to day what's going to happen in our lives. We're just like fish who are swimming along and suddenly we're caught in a net, or we're like a bird who's flying and suddenly caught in a snare. We don't know when evil is going to befall us. Paul said this in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. He said, "Now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now we know in part, but then we shall know even as we're known." James, in James chapter 4, verse 14, he says this, "You do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." The Bible tells us that we cannot predict what's going to happen. God doesn't give us insight as into, okay, well, tomorrow at 12 o'clock, you're going to be sitting in an intersection and this is going to happen. The Bible tells us that life is short and that we go from day to day not knowing what's going to befall us today. So do we go through life pessimistically and like, woe is me? No, but we go through life understanding that the world system we're in is dying. And people around us, all of us, are still paying the price for the sin of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And that we cannot see clearly just yet. Now we see just dimly. So if we follow that logic, then it becomes incorrect for us to minimize the will of God to simply an act. And that's what we have a tendency to do sometimes. We take the will of God and we minimize it down to an act. Oh, well, this happened. Well, it must be the will of God. Well, that happened. Oh, it must be the will of God. Well, this occurred. Well, that must be the will of God. Well, this person got sick and died. Well, that just must have been the will of God. Well, this person they lost their job. Well, it must have been the will of God. Well, this person, this happened. And so we have a tendency to take this phrase that Jesus said, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And we have a tendency to try to bring it down and minimize it to just an act. And it becomes our excuse, our reason, our justification for things that happen that we cannot explain. It's God's will. Now, I don't want you to think, well, Rodney is now saying that, you know, everything's just, you're flying by the seat of your pants and you never know. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is we cannot take what Jesus is saying in this prayer and it become our reasoning for what happens in life. God's will is more than a reason for an event. And it is human nature for us to try to explain the unexplainable. Matthew chapter 5, verse 45, Jesus said this, speaking of his Father, "He makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust." You know, this was the attempt of Job's friends. We talked about this morning in Sunday school, because they were trying to come up with a reason why all these bad things had happened to Job. And one of them said to him in Job chapter 4, verse 7, 8, he says to Job, "Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same." It's that thinking of, well, if something bad has happened, there's something bad you've done. It was just God's will. This thinking even went to the disciples in John chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. It says, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Because it's our thinking. It's the way we think. We may not voice it, but if something bad happens, then there must be something bad I've done. It's got to be my fault. It's got to be something I've done. And so then we have a tendency to blame ourselves or blame God. And then Jesus comes along and says, when you pray this prayer, remember to say this, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So God's will is not an act. And God's will is not an excuse. God's will is an attitude. God's will is an attitude. When I am saying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, I am saying that I am actively seeking God's will in my life. Jesus said this in John chapter 5, verse 30. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. I don't seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. So I'm saying, Lord, today I seek your will in my life. I don't know what that's going to look like, Lord, but I seek your will in my life. Whatever that brings, Lord, I'm seeking your will in my life. Not as, well, Lord, this happened to me, so it must be. No, Lord, I'm starting off the day saying that I am actively seeking the will of God in my life. And I'm saying not only that I'm going to actively seek God's will in my life, but I'm saying that I'm willing to seek His will even in the midst of my pain. Matthew chapter 26, verses 39 and 42, Jesus is in the garden praying. And Matthew wrote this, he went a little farther and fell on his face and he prayed saying, oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. Again, a second time, he went away and prayed saying, oh, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done. Now we're getting into the focus of the will of God. When I say to you that the will of God is not an act or an excuse, the will of God is an attitude. Jesus is modeling that attitude when he's saying, I don't want to go through this. This is not what I want in my life. And it's okay for us to say that. It's okay for us to walk out of the doctor's office and say, this is not what I wanted to hear. It's okay for us to have something happen and to say, God, this is not what I thought would, the way it was going to turn out. It's okay. But then we have to come to that. We can't just shut the door on it and say, well, I guess it's just God's will. We have to keep that door open and say, Father, this is not what I wanted in my life. But help me to have a healthy, righteous, Christ-like attitude in the midst of this. Help me not miss what you're trying to do in my life that is bigger than this event. That's the attitude that I'm talking about. It's not just saying, well, I guess, you know, it's okay. You know, it's just God's will. No. It is saying, Lord, this is not what I wanted. This is not the diagnosis I expected here. This is not the results I was expecting back. This is not the turn I was expecting to take in my life. But Lord, I believe there's something bigger you're trying to do here. And it's bigger than this act. And that's what I want to find, God. I want to find what is it that you're really trying to do in my life through this. You didn't bring this into my life, but you can use this in my life. I love what Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 18. He said, in everything give thanks, For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. So Jesus says, when you pray, don't be like the Gentiles, or the Pharisees. Don't stand on the street corner and scream as loud as you can in your prayer so everybody will hear you. Don't be like the Gentiles that use a bunch of words because they think that verbiage is what God is interested in. Listen to what he says as he's leading in this. He says, do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask. So when I pray, thy will be done, I'm also saying that I'm going to honor God by my attitude. Here's the beauty of the will of God. It is that when I am not so focused on trying to figure out why this is happening in my life, and I begin to look at the lives of others, it brings me into an attitude of gratitude for what God is doing, not just in my life, but in the lives of others. This week in my devotions, I read this, and I want to share this with you as I close this morning. And I quote, the writer said this, when I am in debt, I want money. If I'm facing a hard circumstance, I want a solution. If I'm in a difficult battle, I want victory. I want God to provide all these things. All the while, God simply wants to provide himself. Jesus is the answer. The answer might not involve a windfall of money to get out of debt, or a solution to the problem, or a victory in the battle. And then the author said this, that's the problem. I really don't so much want Jesus as I want help. I want Jesus to help me more than I want Jesus to have me. I look for solutions when I really need a Savior. But Jesus is not God's solution to all our problems. Jesus is God's gift of himself to us. Then he goes on and he says, Jesus can solve our problems, and at times he will. But this is not his primary concern. Jesus most cares about becoming our life, our hope, our love, our joy, and our all in all. True maturity does not come from pleading for answers to our prayers, but from desperately seeking the one who answers. That's what I'm talking about when I say that the will of God is not an act, nor an excuse or a reason. The will of God, when Jesus said, pray, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, he's calling us to open our eyes to something bigger than what I'm going through. To something bigger. And the bigger is, Jesus, it's really you that I need. I want an answer. I want my pain resolved. I want my pain alleviated. But Jesus, what I really need is you. And those problems that come into our lives are not necessarily God's will. But here is what God's will is that those problems would cause us to turn our eyes upon Jesus and say, Lord, I need you. I need you. Yesterday afternoon, Sherry and I went to see Lorraine. And as we were talking to her, and getting ready to, we had prayer with her and we were getting ready to leave, we were at the door, Lorraine said, she told me about two things that had happened the past week. One of them was, she said, Tom came to see her. And she said, you know, Tom and I, we're soldiers in the same war. And she said, the thing about Tom is he can empathize with me. It's moving beyond your problem and stepping into the problem of someone else and saying, God, I'm going to have to just trust you with my problem. I just want to do your will in the midst of my problem. And then she said, and I got the sweetest card from Tony and Betty. And she said, in the card, Betty wrote about fear and having courage. And she said, it was the perfect card and it came the perfect day. It's easy for us to get absorbed into our problem. And Lord, what are you doing about my problem? And I want to know your will in my problem. And I want to know why this problem is in my life. And God is saying, will you just step out into life and begin to look and say, Lord, I'm going to entrust my problem to you. I'm going to let my problem, Lord, become your problem. And I'm going to be used by you to help someone else see you in their problem. That is what Jesus was saying when he said, when you pray, pray, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Because he said, when you pray that, you're saying, I'm willing to help someone else find your will in their problem as I search for your will in my problem. My prayer this week for you and for me as well is that we would begin to get our eyes off my problem and my situation and my circumstance. It's not belittling, it's not making little of your problem. But Lord, open my eyes to see that I can trust your will in my life, while at the same time, I can help somebody find your will in their life. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Father, we are seekers of your will, we're seekers of your way. But Lord, you also know that we are prone to focus on our life and our problems and our needs and our situations. And then we begin to say, well, I don't understand. I don't understand. This doesn't make sense to me. I can't reason this out. And you stand there gently and say, it's not about you. Trust me. Trust me that I'll work my will out in your life. Help someone else find my will in their lives. Lord, I pray that your will would come, that your kingdom would come, and your will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And may we be people, Father, who trust you and who trust your will while we walk out the doors of this building today, resolute and confident that you can also use us this week to help someone find God's will in their problem. I pray this now in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. I'm going to ask you to stand with me this morning. We're going to close a little differently.